Hey, this is Kyle Clark. You're listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News and streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com.
Fairy tale and movie monsters are fell in a single blow. Not how it goes against a monster wildfire, though. Instead, firefighters are making slow and steady progress against the Aspen Acres fire in southern Colorado, the fire that's burned hundreds of homes in Pueblo and Custer counties. There is an army out there, more than 1,500 firefighters working on the ground and in the air, and they have wrestled the Aspen Acres fire to 15% containment. Our Mark Salinger is live outside the small town of Beulah tonight, and its residents are among the 1,100 people evacuated. But Mark, the town stands thanks to the heroism of neighbors.
Yeah, Kyle, this is about as close as you can get to the town of Beulah right now. Just down the road behind me, there's a National Guard Humvee and a roadblock that's turning people around. But when you look at the fire map of the Aspen Acres fire, 95,000 acres burned. And right in the center of that, there's a small little circle of a town that was spared. That town is Beulah, a town with 22 volunteer firefighters that defended their town from the Aspen Acres fire as it moved in, even as some of those firefighters learned that their homes had also been destroyed.
Monday was a nightmare that we hoped we never had to see.
At one point, we look up and we could see it starting to come over the hill.
I called one of the local guys, one of the volunteers, and said, "How bad is it?" And he said, "You need to get here."
We heard there was 100 mile an hour gusts. That wind changed. It started coming the other direction and it blew it down through us. And at that point, it was just get in there, start saving what we can.
My son was on the first truck that went over to Aspen Acres to start initial attack.
Fuel, heat, and topography are what drive fires. And that day, it was all working against us.
We know we're going to lose some, you know, and that's going through your mind. And you know there's going to be stuff that we can't save. But the mindset goes to what can we save?
And at that point, we were afraid we were going to lose the whole valley.
Yeah, I mean, your heart would just drop every time it moved another direction because then something else was at risk.
Houses can be replaced. We need to make sure everybody is out and out of the way. We're in there beating on doors. We're tying, flagging houses of, okay, we met somebody here, they're leaving.
It was really close to losing the whole town.
And when it was raging down at our house that night, I called my husband and I said, "I love that you're trying to save what you can. I don't want my house. I want my husband and I want my son. And that is all I care about. I only want the heartbeats. I don't care about the house."
We had several of our firefighters lost their homes. And those that lost their homes, they were told and they continued to fight to save the rest of the community. So
we have a mother-daughter team on the department. And they're ones who lost their home. And to see that happen, and they both just kept on going.
It's heartbreaking, every single house that we lost. But we try to focus on the wins that we were able to make.
A big part of the town is good. The big part of what we call Beulah proper looks to be in good shape.
The town of Beulah has been held by the volunteers for about a week now. We're not just talking about the local firefighters. We're talking about their families, their wives, their kids. We had kids at the, some people's kids at the station washing towels to keep us out there on the line. So in a small volunteer department, it's a family.
They're awesome. We would all fight any fire anywhere with each other.
You'll have to cut it. We kicked ass. The community and the public needed to know that we fought and we fight for our community and our people. It's more than a fire department. We are the community. We are what's going to hold it together.
Over those first couple of days, they did have mutual aid from around the county coming in to help them, but the fire was spreading everywhere and everybody needed help. It wasn't until a couple of days later that the state and federal resources came in to help protect the small town of Beulah. Kyle, now more than a week later after they made that stand, there are now 1,500 wildland firefighters working on this fire from across the country here in Colorado.
Mark, that was a remarkable story about how Beulah was saved. What is the current state of the firefight from what you can gather?
And they're still fighting this fire every day, trying to protect their town. It's moved on to different directions, but there's still the potential that a new spark comes in, and they still have to work to protect it at this exact hour. Extremely, extremely smoky right now. It's 6:02 p.m. and people are driving with their lights on because it's almost dark out here with all the smoke that's just come on. We talked about the terrible air quality all across the Front Range. This is really the start of it, where all that smoke is just lifting up over us.
And you can see it in your shot, Mark. It looks like a Martian landscape, the way that everything has an orangish red tint to it. Yeah, Mark Salinger.
Exactly.
Great work out there. Thank you. So there is a Southern Colorado Wildfire Relief Fund set up to help the hundreds of people who lost their homes and the others impacted by the Aspen Acres fire. This is going to be our Word of Thanks micro-giving campaign tomorrow, but the funds are needed ASAP, so I gave today and would invite you to do the same. If you'd like to join me, scan the QR code on your screen. Text the word THANKS to 303-871-1491. I talked with United Way Southern Colorado. They have set up this fund to help those Coloradans in need in both the short term and with the long term recovery of their communities. And that nonprofit is not taking out any fees or any overhead. We're also keeping an eye on the Willow Fire burning near Leadville. This has gone through more than 4,000 acres and forced 400 Coloradans to evacuate. 600 first responders are on the ground fighting that fire. So far, they have 5% containment. The firefighting efforts in Leadville and in Pueblo are being supplemented as crews are being reassigned off of the Snyder Fire on the western slope. That's nearing full containment after burning 47 square miles. That's the fire where three firefighters died and two others were hurt. Meteorologist Chris Bianchi's along. Isn't that remarkable, Chris, when you hear what folks in Beulah did to save their neighbor's property, but understanding at the end of the day, right, what really mattered was their lives and the lives of the folks in their town. But what a fight they put up. That's astonishing.
Finding out that their homes had burned and then they went on to continue to save their neighbors. That is Colorado right there, isn't it, Kyle?
Yes, indeed it is. Yeah, so here at home in Denver, we are certainly dealing with the smoke that's coming in from which fires in particular, right? Because there's fires to the south of us, fires to the west of us.
Yeah, it's a good question, Kyle. And in Denver last week, it was specifically the Gold Mountain Fire. That's where we saw the majority of that smoke from. This week, though, it's really just a huge blob, a big mix of all the different fires that have essentially come together, and they're now kind of getting mixed into the upper level flow. So point being, it's not one specific fire here in the Denver area and across most of Colorado that you're seeing that smoke from. And in Denver, that has triggered 10 consecutive days with air quality alerts. Last time we did not have one, June the 27th. And that is the longest such streak since 2024. But the good news is we're going to break that, more on that in just a second. So far this year, we've had 21 air quality alerts in Denver and Fort Collins down through Douglas County, the I-25 urban corridor. That is the most year-to-date on record. It is unusual for us to have this many by this point of the season. Those tend to maximize in July and early August. That's when you have the most ground ozone that's in place, and it's the ground ozone that you're really feeling more than anything else. But look at that. In Denver, a little sign that we've got some good news on the way. Smoke will diminish considerably. It's already starting to, in fact, as we speak, and we're going to see that smoke continue to diminish tonight and to tomorrow, and I hope, anticipate, that across the mountains that firefighters will continue to gain more ground on those big fires that continue to burn.
Thank you, Chris. No prison time for the former Mountain View town councilman who shot a teenager in the face. Brent Metz says his gun accidentally went off as he approached two kids who had trespassed on his property asking permission to take homecoming photos. Our Janelle Finch joins us after the sentencing hearing out in Jeffco. And Janelle, what was the judge's reasoning behind a shorter jail stint instead of prison?
Kyle, a Jefferson County judge sentenced Metz to 3 months work release and 4 years probation. The judge had a few significant factors to weigh out today, including the gravity of a teen getting shot in the face and Metz's lack of criminal history. Those combined ultimately led up to the sentence that was delivered today. The judge called this case troubling, knowing two young teens were involved and one was shot in the face. At the time, the boys claimed they were on Metz's property to take homecoming pictures there. Jack Howard, the now 19-year-old who was shot, stood beside his mom in court. He had previously testified in trial that he thought he was going to die the day of the shooting. Before the sentence was read, Howard's mom spoke to the judge on his behalf, and Metz asked for mercy.
Our families have endured sleepless nights, fear, anger, and the constant replaying of what if. We have had to comfort our boys through panic and rebuild their sense of safety, something he shattered in seconds.
There hasn't been a single day since that accident that I have not thought of and prayed for you and your family.
The defense did file a motion for a new trial. The prosecution has until the end of the week to respond to that. Then from that point, the defense will have 7 days to respond to that. And despite this, the defense does say that they will move forward with calling for a new trial. Kyle.
Janelle, how did the victim's family take the sentence when that was handed down?
Yeah, I mean, we didn't get a chance to hear from the victims outside of the court, but the DA did say on their behalf that, of course, they will stay in touch with the family as they continue to process what this all looks like. In court, they were asking for a sentence that did include time in the Department of Corrections. Of course, again, we did not get that. The judge said that due to Metz's lack of criminal history, that's why it did not come down as that significant. But again, knowing that there is a lot of trauma involved from the initial incident, it's definitely something that the DA will be keeping in touch with the families on.
All right, Janelle Finch, good to have you on next. Thank you. The GOP race for governor is essentially over. I'll have a word about why I think some folks are taking away the wrong lessons from what happened. And a pilot inspires kids to overcome their challenges, like he did. Next. Chris Bianchi's back. Hot one. Hottest one.
And hottest day so far this year for the third time. We hit 97 today. We hit it yesterday as well. We hit it also last month. So tied for our hottest temperature so far in 2026. We're probably going to best that, put that in quotation marks, this weekend. We've got a line of showers and storms moving through Washington as well as Logan counties right now. So small hail, some gusty winds with that. In Denver, things fairly quiet right now, but off to the south, we do have a few gusty showers. We'll keep that chance for one or two of these around for the next hour or two. Did see some brief 45, 50 mile an hour winds earlier on this evening with some of those showers and storms. Again, we'll keep the chance for a few of these around for tonight. Then we'll clear things out for tomorrow morning. Then we'll have a chance for some more showers and storms tomorrow afternoon, and that is going to help scour out all that smoke. I know the air quality has been terrible. You might notice that within the last 2 to 3 hours, the air quality has improved a bit for us in the Denver area. We're starting to push that smoke off to the east, and we'll continue to do that as we head into tomorrow. Still not entirely done with the smoke, but it should be a lot better, and that includes much of the state as well. So if you're watching me from especially Highway 50 on north, that air quality is going to improve quite a bit for you for tomorrow. Then, watching this weekend with a notable heat wave, temperatures near 100 degrees Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday. Also, peep those overnight lows. They'll be around 70, and that may be what you end up feeling more than anything else with those very warm overnight low temperatures as well.
A week after Colorado's primary election, and it's all but over. No official call by the Associated Press, but State Senator Barb Kirkmeyer hasn't meaningfully chipped into the lead of Ministry Leader Victor Marks as the final votes are counted in the GOP race for governor. Marks' lead, just under 2,000 votes, is outside the automatic recount margin, which would be one half of 1% of his total. Voters who had signature or ID issues still have until tomorrow to cure their ballot, as it's called. Tomorrow is also the last day for military or overseas ballots to be received and counted. So it is a longer than long shot that Kirkmeyer will be able to close the gap. But in a statement this afternoon, she said the race is still not over and, quote, every legal vote deserves to be counted. Journalists and commentators can have a tendency to write about what we think is happening or what some hope is happening rather than what is actually happening. You'll often see it in reports about the economy or why the Rockies are finally going to turn it around this year. And we saw it in some media outlets' reports suggesting that the Colorado Republican Party is making a turn back toward competitiveness and more centrist candidates. Those reports were based on State Senator Barb Kirkmeyer's unexpectedly strong showing in the race for governor, a race that a week after primary night still hasn't been officially called, but is poised for Ministry Leader Victor Marks to win by about 2,000 votes. In all honesty, these suggestions that Colorado's Republican voters were making a turn away from the hard right was never supported by logic or math. You got to remember, this was a three-way race that also included MAGA pastor and frequent fabulist Scott Bottoms. And between Marks and Bottoms, they won more than 60% of the GOP primary vote. Even a narrow win for Kirkmeyer, and that looks very unlikely at this point, does not represent a majority of Republican primary voters in Colorado choosing to turn away from the fringe in favor of a more competitive candidate. And don't forget, Kirkmeyer and Bottoms have both said that Victor Marks is a con man and they won't support him in November. I hate to break it to everyone wanting to write a different story, but the Colorado Republican Party is still exactly where it was before primary night. Hopelessly divided, and the far right is still winning.
Alone, right? They have so much support, and they can aspire to be whatever they want to be.
Kids dealing with medical challenges can feel misunderstood. There is a pilot who understands what they're facing and wants to help them overcome it. For kids and teenagers fighting severe illnesses, it can be hard to feel like better days are ahead. One pilot with United hopes his story will inspire kids in Denver facing those challenges.
How are you today? Good morning. Welcome. Hey, so nice to meet you. Come on over and we'll get you checked in, okay?
We're here today to celebrate United's and Make-A-Wish's 40th anniversary of their collaboration with each other.
And you're going to go on a passport tour with us, and then every stop we make, you're going to get a stamp in your passport.
We've invited 4 Make-A-Wish kids here to the United Flight Training Center here in Denver, Colorado. Well, they'll have an opportunity to tour the facilities, get an idea of what it takes to become a United Airlines pilot.
We are in United's simulator test spots where captains come to practice their first time and come prove their license for next time so they can keep flying. Oh yeah, I landed it 3 times, yeah. Pilot said I did a good job, so I'm taking his word for it.
I am a first officer here at United Airlines. So my connection with Make-A-Wish stems from when I was born. I was born in Southeast China in a town called Shantou. And I was adopted when I was 2 by my parents, and they brought me back to Colorado. In November of 2007, I was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia. I'm happy to say that I've been in remission ever since the bone marrow transplant. February of 2009, Make-A-Wish had come to me and notified me that I was eligible for a wish. At the time, I didn't know what to say. And then ultimately, I decided that I wanted to go back to China and visit my orphanage. And I had this, you know, aspiration of becoming a pilot. That stayed with me.
And it shows kids that have had sad days and hard moments that they still have chance, they still live a great life in this world.
There is a light at the end of the tunnel.
And it's really nice to see that there are people other than just me who've had cancer and that get wannabe pilots and still have the chance to become one.
Go and fulfill your dreams, right? Go and shoot for the stars.
Good for him. Here we are thinking this was a great show, then Marilyn hands me a stack of paper and I learn what you think about it.
Okay.
Feedback's next. Feedback tonight on my commentary on the state of the Colorado Republican Party. Margaret says, I agree 100% with your point about the Colorado Republican Party, rather. But Margaret says the bigger story is the Democrats' hard turn towards socialism and communism. So Margaret, in pieces, one, the bigger story is what happened with Colorado Democrats on election night, which is why we talked about them for a week and we're just now doing the assessment of the Colorado GOP. Two, when you say stuff like Democrats are turning towards communism, that's silly season. It makes it sound like you got your brain cooked in a Facebook comment section. And three, the tension between the hard left of the Democratic Party and the center is going to be the defining story in Colorado going forward.
Thanks for listening to the podcast version of Next. Catch us live weeknights at 6 Mountain Time on 9 News, streaming live same time on 9 News Plus. Email me anytime at next@9news.com. Next producer is Mallory Harris. Our digital producer is Marilyn Moore. Our visual editor is Jeff Sartell. Our reporters include Marshall Zellinger, Mark Salinger, Angeline McCall, and Evan Kruel. Misty Montano is 9 News' digital director. I'm Kyle Clark. I'll see you next time.